Catherine Bocanegra comes to us from the Windy City of Chicago. She works with at-risk youth and organized community-level strategies to enhance public safety. This year, Catherine began a PhD program in social work at the University of Chicago. She is married to Eduardo, and together they are the proud parents of their daughter Salome. With twins coming in January of 2015, their home parish is Christ the Savior Orthodox Church. Well, I didn't add there that you're a brave woman. I should have added that as well. So what you're doing clearly is not for the weak of stomach. This is an amazing intro. And Catherine, thanks for coming on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Social media, internet activity, as you know, is very popular among all levels of society, all ages. It's just unavoidable at this point. Let's talk about the dangers when it comes to children.
Absolutely. Well, young people have access to new powerful technology like smartphones, tablets, social media, and even more than that. However, with great power comes great responsibility, and all too often we see our young people making poor decisions with this new technology without realizing the dangers and consequences. Some of these dangers and potential consequences are connected to cyberbullying, security on popular apps on smartphones like Instagram, Snapchat, Vine, Twitter, Facebook, etc. The danger of engaging in or being exposed to potentially illicit materials and predators using the information mm-hmm. that young people are posting on public websites.
You know, when I was young, I guess I'm going to date myself here, Catherine, but I remember having a pad of white paper and a composition notebook and a pencil. Mm-hmm. And I had encyclopedias on a shelf. That was my sort of road to knowledge. And now it's just unbelievable what's going right. on. I mean, can you give us an example of something that you've seen that might be something very, very difficult for young people to comprehend of what's going on?
Sure, absolutely. Obviously, as you shared within my bio, I work in urban settings, and so often I work at the extreme end of things in which, unfortunately, I see young people's well-being, development, and even safety threatened as a result of engaging in social media in very harmful ways. Mm-hmm. So before giving you an extreme example, I could actually share an example of my own brother, okay. who was in college and a 19-year-old. He went to an OCF meeting.
That's and Orthodox Christian Fellowship meeting, right?
Yes, and they were talking about a new martyr within the Russian Orthodox Church of Evgeny Rodionov, who was beheaded for his faith in Chechnya for not taking off his cross.
My goodness.
And my brother was, you know, moved and inspired by his example, and so he came home, or he came to his dorm room, got on the internet, and wanted to just find out more information about this young martyr, and he came across a website in which they had a video of other young Christian men being beheaded.
Oh my.
And it was a video that you didn't even have to press play for this video to start. It just automatically was playing on the website. And so without even wanting to, my brother was exposed to this very traumatic video mm-hmm. and was really disturbed. And he called me the next day and told me that he hadn't been able to sleep, that he was unable to remove the images from his mind, mm-hmm. That he was really upset by what he witnessed. He understands that this is the reality of many young peoples in environments in which Orthodox Christians or Christians in general are a minority and facing persecution. But nonetheless, he was exposed to something very harmful and traumatic through the internet. And he asked me what he should do. And you know, in that case, I helped my brother process this through a variety of different methods. So one is just talking about it, getting it out of your system really helps people. Another thing was talking to a priest and having that priest help him process what he was exposed to, talking to friends, praying, accessing the healing sacraments of the Orthodox Church. So my brother really had a whole network of support around him to help process this traumatic exposure to something really violent on social media. But my brother is the exception because most young people don't have those supportive networks, and many times they won't even reach out to an adult to say that they accidentally stumbled upon something that really bothered them. Mm-hmm. And then you begin to think about what are the long-term consequences of repeated exposure to illicit or violent material through social media. Okay. For young people.
Well, I mean, that's very good that you have, at least your brother had, this avenue through which to go. And some young people, like you say, they don't have it. Now, you could say, well, they shouldn't have gotten involved to begin with. But the reality is that, as you said, on the internet, it's really purposeful searching when you do it. And very rare does something pop back at you. But when it does and you don't know what it is and you click on it, well, you'll either get a virus in your computer or you'll get something that you really shouldn't see. So it's really very important that we're aware of what we're doing and when we're out there. I mean, are there other concerns for children on the internet? That you mentioned some of them, but let's go into them a little bit deeper.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the big concerns is just, you know, I think parents' involvement in their children accessing social media and how easy it is for young people to access real-time virtual communities in which they could potentially be endangered. So the advent of the smartphone, young people are connected to the internet, you know, they could be 24/7. Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, these are public websites in which whatever they post can be viewed by third parties that they do not know, even though there are safety features and privacy features in which one's identity and information can be protected. Most parents and young people are not using those features. The second, you know, another thing that is a potential threat is the having more laptops rather than desktops at home. You know, when I was almost in college, when our family got our first computer and we had it in the kitchen, and it was a huge clunky desktop. You know, none of us were going to pick up this huge clunky desktop and take it into our bedroom,
right,
and then go on and surf the internet. It was public for everybody in our family. But now, you know, more families are buying laptops, and what that means is that you can go into your room, you can surf the internet, you can wake up at odd hours, and parents can be totally uninvolved or unaware of at what level their children are accessing internet and social media on top of smartphones. I respect and honor parents who just don't want to engage in media technology, have no internet at home as well, but I understand there's also a growing difficulty given the fact that kids have to look up things online for schoolwork. Many schools are using internet technology for educational purposes. So it's, I think, rare when there is no technology in the household at all. So how can you, I think, in a meaningful and informed and a protective way, engage these technologies at home is a conversation that is really critical at this time for families.
Well, there's also the I think this sort of isolationist feeling that people, if they go into sort of a cocoon and they circle the wagons, that they'll be safe. They don't have to expose their children to anything. And that's not, I mean, I understand protecting them, yes, because I have six of my own and two grandchildren, so I know what that means. But on the other hand, you can't protect them from everything. You've got to make them strong to be able to go out there, strong in the faith, so when they get there, they can deal with all these crazy things that happen.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about socializing. It seems to me that when I sit down and let's say I'll have a youth group together and they bring their smartphones or whatever you call them, Androids, I can't keep up anymore, but they're pecking away with their fingers, but they're not talking to each other. They're not even looking at each other. Can we talk about that, the socialization ramifications of this new type of internet communication?
Absolutely, and you see that everywhere. You see that when I take public transportation in Chicago, I see that most people don't even make eye contact with each other now. And you're talking about, you know, sitting in a train or sitting in a bus with 100 people who don't even make eye contact with each other because they're all engaged in their technologies, their smartphones, their tablets, their, you know, small laptops that they're carrying with each other. And then we're seeing that with young people as well now. So there's actually two interesting sides to your question. So one is the socialization that's provided through social media that is very attractive to young people, and then also the negative impact on, I would say, social processes that is introduced by social media. So to begin with, if a young person, for whatever reason, doesn't feel very well connected to their friends at school, is going through a difficult transition time where they feel isolated or alone, social media provides this false virtual community in which they have a sense of belonging that they can then grow very attached to. They feel like they have friends and people who understand them, you know, in quotations, on the internet, and they can begin sharing information that they really shouldn't and that isn't mediated by adult supervision or by a community of caring people around them. And then to address your question, if young people's primary way of interacting with each other is through texting, through sending photos of themselves, that has a huge impact on their identity development, mm-hmm. on their self-image. Going back to the example or drawing a comparative example of when you were a teenager, when I was in high school, teenagers are obsessed with maintaining an image, right? That's a key developmental task we know in high school. But I knew that that task was only presented to me when I had to go to school. But then I could come home and I could put on my sweatpants and I could be whoever I wanted to be around my family.
Right.
But now young people have this 24/7 pressure to maintain and project a social identity through sending pictures, through posting things on Facebook, through tweeting, and whatever other social media they're engaging. And think about the anxiety and stress that that can cause about young people, bring about on young people, especially because many of these social media websites invite other people to comment on whatever they're posting.
Right, right, right.
And it can be negative.
And we're not wired for this. I don't think the human... this is not, and forgive me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think this is what God intended for the human being. I mean, he even rested on the seventh day. We don't rest anymore. It's just boom, boom, you know,
exactly.
go, 24/7, image. I mean, mm-hmm. that stuff, you know, you look at, for example, I mean, when God created the human being, he created Adam, and then he decided to create Eve, right, to complement, mm-hmm. so that he could go forth and procreate and inhabit the world. Okay, he created a community, a togetherness. The Holy Trinity is a community. No one is able to exist on their own just through technology. You have to have another human being in which to interact, right or wrong?
Right. No, absolutely. And now, unfortunately, social media... or this false virtual community has replaced human contact and human community. And that thwarts their development, that thwarts their ability to navigate the real world as it is, mm-hmm. and then that puts them, I think, at great risk mm-hmm. for it, being exposed to something illicit on the internet mm-hmm. or being preyed upon by people who can identify young people who feel alone, isolated, nobody understands me type thing. On the internet.
Okay. Let me ask you this question. I think I know the answer, but I want to hear it from you because you're the professional here. I'm the student. Does it really make a difference for kids to have adults in their social structure?
Well, absolutely. And it feels very kind of like a no-brainer. Like, yeah, why would not a caring adult have a positive impact on a young person's life? But research that I'm engaged in right now, particularly around how violence impacts young people, is proving just how powerful the presence of one caring adult is in a young person's life. When I say caring adult, that's somebody who shows interest and care in their well-being and their day-to-day activities. So how are things at school? How are your friends? What's bothering you? You know, if you ever need anything, I'm here for you. So that a young person has a sense that their life matters to somebody and that they have somebody who would care and respond if they're in a situation of crisis. So in that absence, right, we find that this cushion around youth to navigate different challenges in their environment, whether it's pressures at school, pressures in their social environments, pressures in their community, whatever it is, that it is lessened. So they're more vulnerable to these challenges. The specific research that I'm doing is looking at young people who've been exposed to high levels of violence and trauma before the age of 18. So that includes abuse, neglect, and different kinds of violent events in the community, like witnessing a shooting, being exposed to intimate partner violence or domestic violence in the household. So we're looking at young people who have been exposed to high levels of violence and the impact that having a caring adult has on their developmental trajectory. Mm-hmm. And what that we're finding is that the more caring adults in these young people's lives, the more likely they are to have healthy and successful futures. They will do well in school. they will be able to engage in positive, healthy relationships with their peers and, you know, long-term, you know, be able to go into college, find jobs. But in the absence of those caring adults, what we're seeing is that young people's attitudes towards violence are much more normative, meaning that if they're encountered with violence, they're more likely to respond to violence. Mm-hmm. We're finding that it's much more difficult for them to navigate school in terms of their academic performance and peer socialization. And then if those issues are already presenting themselves, you can imagine long term what that means as an adult in engaging healthy relationships, you know, continuing their education, employment, et cetera.
Okay.
That has a huge, huge impact on a person's life.
Well, you mentioned some things about parents. Now, I think some parents now are sort of running away from parenthood because it's mm-hmm. very hard. They get tired. They're working two jobs, whatever they're doing. And they say, okay, you know, the kid will be fine. I really don't need to be that involved. And many times when a parent will ask a child, how are you doing? They sort of get like the cold shoulder. Well, you know, you're not cool, mom and dad. I don't really want to answer any of your questions. So what you're mm-hmm. saying is that we should not succumb to either, that we should be active parents, being involved, asking questions, showing genuine concern with the kids, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That constitutes that caring adult, right?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, when I became a parent, my father told me, like, being a parent is being a martyr.
It
was the best parenting advice I ever got.
It is. But, you know, being involved in your children's lives pays off in the end because you can tell they become well-rounded individuals. They're kind individuals. They care and they achieve. They excel. I mean, it's been seen over and over and over again.
Absolutely.
One final question. In your professional opinion, how old should a person be? This is going to be a good one. It's going to create a lot of buzz. In your professional opinion, how old should a person be before owning a smartphone with the power of the internet in the palm of their hands? I'm asking that question because we want our listeners to also interact with us on Facebook and Twitter. So please answer this question, and then we'll hold on to the bandwidth and see where it goes.
I really don't believe that it is necessary to have a smartphone before college. Even though there's an immense amount of pressure for young people to have smartphones as early as junior high, I would say even earlier than that, fourth grade, you see young people walking around with smartphones. But I don't think it's necessary before college. And the reason I bring up college is that many, many universities are engaging in social media for educational purposes. So you download your class lecture on your smartphone and you can listen to it. You know, my brother, who I mentioned earlier, is in medical school, and they required for all students to have, you know, iPhone version 5.0 because of certain technologies that they use in their medical rotations that are facilitated by the iPhone. But apart from those educational, constructive purposes for the iPhone, having it before in high school is just, I think, exponentially exposing your young people to these social pressures and anxieties that social media brings on. And they can have a cell phone, but it doesn't need to have internet in which you can access Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, etc. And there's all sorts of cell phones out there. Believe it or not, there are cell phones that are not smartphones that are healthier, I think, options for pre-college age students, ones in which parents can control the number of minutes, like they're prepaid. You can only receive incoming calls but can't make outgoing calls. Really, I leave that to the discretion of parents in terms of what's most appropriate with the circumstances of their children. So I'm not saying no to cell phones before college, but I'm definitely not recommending the purchase or utilization of cell phones or of smartphones before college.
All right, Catherine. Well, we very much appreciate the time you took coming to us from Chicago on the phone. This is an incredible interview. We hope people will listen to it and interact with us on our social media platforms and give us their thoughts and concerns. I'm sure we'll talk to you again, Catherine.
All right. Thank you, Father.